I'd like to start by thanking CEDA for the opportunity to speak today. It's certainly much appreciated. As economists, ASIL Tasman has been doing a lot of work in the area of energy and climate change over the last few years. We've recently completed studies for both government and for the industry, and I intend to just discuss in general terms some of the issues that we've come across from that work. I want to say from the outset that we're of the view that an emissions trading scheme will work, it'll bring about carbon reductions, and it'll do it in the lowest cost and most efficient manner. In short, in combating anthropogenic-induced global warming, it's good policy. Of course, being an economist, I want to place a few caveats around that. The scheme needs to be efficient. If it's not efficient, we won't get the lowest cost and carbon abatement allocated across the economy. We need to avoid any special interest groups or any special interest arrangements that would reduce the scheme's efficiency. Secondly, the scheme clearly should have as broad a coverage as possible. It's particularly relevant with the recent debate with respect to petrol and whether cars should and should not be in the scheme. Excluding key sectors means that other sectors have to do more of the heavy lifting, and it means that the emission savings that we actually get won't be the lowest cost, and so it'll be more expensive for all of us. Thirdly, and this is quite important, looking back at the history of some of the other things that we've done in the country, once established, the scheme needs to be left alone. We can't have politicians or other people interfering with it. Energy prices are going to go up. They're going to rise. And that's going to happen. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Stepping in after the scheme is operating to limit the rises will simply slow or even stop carbon abatement. Our recent modelling efforts have been focused on the period 2010 to 2020, the first 10 years of the scheme. In terms of the scheme, we really see this as the transition period because we're talking about a long-dated approach to actually get long-term carbon reductions. And we've been looking at scenarios for carbon abatement up to around 20% by 2020. And we've looked at different scenarios over that period. Actually getting carbon reductions of 20% by 2020 actually requires more than a 20% reduction over the current emissions levels, because emissions have been growing since 2000. And particularly if you look at the electricity sector, to get a 10% reduction by 2020, you'd actually have to get a 23% reduction over current levels. And if we go to a 20% reduction, it's a 32% reduction over current levels. So our focus has been to model these reductions in order to assess their feasibility and to analyse the effect on carbon permit prices, the likely electricity plant mix, and the effects on the gas market, which is very relevant to the electricity market. ASIL Tasman is well positioned to do this because it has very highly regarded, detailed models of both the electricity market, being a product called PowerMark, and the gas market, called GasMark. We've also been putting some of the outputs of these models into our general equilibrium model, known as Tasman Global, to look at the more general effects across the economy and also to assess some of the impacts of demand reduction. As I stated earlier, our recent findings suggest that the ETS will work as an instrument to achieve emissions reductions targets by 2020. More importantly, it'll work in the way intended. That is, the most costly high emissions intensive plant would appear to be retired first and be replaced with low emissions cost, least cost substitutes. As is expected, the largest impact of the scheme will be felt in Victoria. Tony and Les have both alluded to this, in the brown coal industry. For an emissions reduction target of 20% over 2000 levels, our modelling indicates that most of the Victorian brown coal plant will be shut down, as well as all the coal-fired plant in South Australia and some coal-fired plant in New South Wales and Queensland. We expect that this plant would be replaced by high-efficiency gas turbines, because these plants actually have only about a third of the emissions intensity of brown coal and around half the emissions intensity of black coal. The government renewable energy target means that some of the replacement plant will be renewable. I say that because our view is that the renewable energy is not cheap. It's certainly not the cheapest way of abating carbon. So, and we assume some geothermal and some solar as well. And obviously there's a significant part played by wind, particularly in the southern states of Western Australia, South Australia and Victoria. The modelling assumes various emission targets and looks for permit prices required to achieve it. We've estimated that permit prices in excess of $45 a tonne of carbon in today's prices would be required to achieve more than a 10% emissions target. So that's $45 a tonne. That's significant in terms of the European price, which is currently, I think, around 23 euros, which equates to around about $35 a tonne in Australia. This does not take account of any potential hoarding of permits for periods beyond 2020, in which greater emissions reductions will be required. Any such hoarding would obviously apply upward pressure. On the other hand, there is the opportunity to look at purchasing permits from the international community. Particularly, we think there's opportunities from Asian stopping of land clearing in some of the Asian countries. Of course, any restrictions on access to those permits or any downgrading of those permits because of concerns about the value of them would remove that downward pressure. We've also looked at the impact on flow through to retail prices, the prices that we would all see. Our modelling indicates that even without emissions trading, electricity prices are going to go up, and that's because the real price of gas and the real price of coal is going up. And we've seen that fairly significantly in recent times. However, our modelling of an emissions trading scheme suggests that the retail price of electricity will rise another third as a consequence of the emissions trading scheme. Most of it's to do with higher energy costs, some's the carbon, and part of it is actually the subsidy associated with the renewable energies target of 20%. And there's also an element associated with increased network costs because some of the new generation needs to go in different locations and requires a different or changed network configurations. One of the biggest impacts of the emissions trading scheme is going to be on natural gas. Our recent electricity market modelling shows that the increase in gas usage for electricity generation is going to rise from around 140 petajoules per annum currently to over 500 petajoules by 2020. That's a 265% increase in the use of gas over that period. I think Tony mentioned that those gas resources in the eastern states are finite. Our gas modelling suggests that they'll come largely from the Bass Strait and from the coal seam fields in New South Wales and Queensland. And our modelling suggests that it is finite. Because we've also made an allowance for a significant amount of gas to go through export into LNG, another 200 or 300 petajoules a year. So the large increase in gas demand means that there's going to be significant price and volume pressures on gas post-2020. We're already seeing significant upward pressure on Eastern Australian gas prices as potential investors line up their reserves for the potential LNG projects, particularly around Gladstone. There's a clear shift in the modelling from a higher to lower zero emissions technologies in the plant mix. As I mentioned earlier, our modelling indicates that most of the major brown coal-fired power stations will close down. The modelling indicates that this is replaced by high efficiency gas, geothermal, lower efficiency open cycle gas, wind and other renewables, particularly solar and biomass. Compared with the business as usual case, the modelling suggests that significant, and when I talk about business as usual, if we didn't have an emissions trading scheme, so compared to the business as usual case, the modelling suggests significant additional capacity is required to be invested over the next 10 years. And there's more than you would under the, simply from retiring plant, because some of the new plant doesn't have the same level of capacity factor, particularly the wind and solar doesn't have the same level of capacity factor as some of the conventional baseload plant that we have today. In terms of demand savings, there will be demand savings from energy conservation programs and indirect response to higher energy prices. And we think they'll be by far the lowest cost form of savings. And in fact, in many cases, they'll have a negative cost. However, we can't see the demand savings having anywhere near enough contribution in themselves. And so we believe there has to be a contribution from the supply side through substitution. The cost of savings from substitution depends on the relative emissions intensity of the retired and replacement plant and the cost of the replacement plant. These costs will change over time quite clearly as generation and fuel costs change and as breakthroughs in new technologies become available. But if we look at the cost savings or the relative costs in terms of our modelling in the year 2010, we would say that high-efficiency gas-fired plant replacing brown coal in Victoria has a cost saving of around $10 a tonne, which is actually relatively low. And that's because we're replacing very high-intensive carbon plant with relatively low-intensive carbon plant. Other technologies in Victoria have much higher cost savings, wind being around $45 a tonne, solar photovoltaics around $130 a tonne, and solar thermal being $160 a tonne. In New South Wales and Queensland, because we're replacing plant that already have a much lower emissions intensity, we would see high-efficiency gas-fired plant replacing black coal at around $45 a tonne. Wind would be at around $75 a tonne, and the photovoltaics are all well over $200 a tonne. These relative savings make it very clear where most of the savings will come from, i.e. they'll be primarily from Victoria, at least in the short term. They also show that RET-based savings, the renewable energy target-based savings, are not the lowest cost and have the potential to distort the emissions trading scheme from the outset. Finally, I might return to my original conclusion that an emissions trading scheme will work. In fact, it's probably the only thing that could deliver such dramatic changes in the electricity industry in such a short time. When we carried out the modelling and simulations for these cases, we found that the volume of plant, the sunk investments, that is, required to be written off and replaced with new generation to be quite unprecedented in Australian history. However, there will be a strong temptation to give in to special interest groups who are pushing new technologies or those who want to keep plants open longer than the new market fundamental suggests, or to avoid the costs that the scheme will impose. We've already seen an example of this with the increased RET target of 20% by 2020. This makes an emissions reduction task more expensive and more difficult, and any further inroads into the integrity of the scheme will make it even more expensive and more difficult again. Thank you.